This is MSONewsSports.com, and this is Connections, a chance to meet your North Shore neighbors. News, politics, left, center, right, newsmakers, people, issues, features. Connections on MSO News Sports.
And welcome to MSO News Sports. This is Connections. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell, the voice of the North Shore, off today, but we have a pretty full program. I think you're going to find it rather interesting. Yes, I do. Spectacular Thursday here on the North Shore, and looks like we're in for a little bit more. Been very kind of a cool summer, but not too bad otherwise. Wife had 1 week off, what was it, back in July? That turned out to be the warmest week of the summer so far, so it's rapidly... I just saw something online on a science website about climate change and the fact that New England apparently is going to be hit much harder with storms in the near future. It wasn't debating who was causing or what was causing climate change, but just the fact that we are due for some, significant storms and precipitation, and including snow. You know, the article was saying just because, we have some cold winters and a lot of snow does not mean that we're not having climate change and that the ecosphere is not getting warmer. But that's a story for another day. We'll see if we can get some experts lined up for that in the near future here on the North Shore. Anyway, this program is designed to be a sort of a magazine-type program. And as you know, if you have anything, if you've seen us do anything over the last 11 years, we try to promote the positive here on the North Shore. We started off, obviously, with sports, but Bill and I both have a lot of experience with news, and we have expanded that to news. And now we've got a lot of live streaming video as well with our streamographer, Andrew Nicastro, and his team. So we will have a lot of football games coming up, hopefully every Friday night, starting in a few weeks. We'll be posting our schedule very shortly. The schedule that's up there right now, I don't even know if it's up there, but if it is, that's not the new one. So we will have that posted relatively soon, as I said. What else do we have here? Okay, so today's lineup, I'm just looking at these tabs at the top of the website. I've got to change one of those. Okay, today's program, we do have... I've got a really interesting interview, I think, with Heather Atwood today. She is of the Two Moms, the midterm podcast team. Nisi Panetta and Heather are the two moms who are, they're on the road, okay, and they're traveling America, and they're actually beginning a series of interviews with candidates all over the country for the midterm elections coming up next year. And their goal is to try to find a common ground between left and right, somewhere in the middle, to see if that's actually possible or if it is happening anywhere in the country. And they'll be they're going to be introducing their podcast very soon, probably. We'll let Heather tell you about that. Also going to be checking in with Sarah Player. She is the Ipswich School Committee Chairperson. We talked with her a few weeks ago, and we'll get an update on what's going on in the town of Ipswich. Also, we'll talk with Greg Verga, getting a little nervous about our upcoming Unfinished Music Fest at the end of the month. We'll see where that stands, and Greg will have an update for that on us. And again, mention how best to get tickets for that event. It's on August 27. That will be in Gloucester. We're also going to meet Mary Marcos, the Gloucester Times reporter, who's relatively new to the Times, and she's been covering all of Cape Ann, primarily Rockport, Essex, and Manchester by the Sea, but also filling in Gloucester as well, covering a variety of topics, and we'll talk with her about some stuff too. So all that's coming up and more, hopefully, here on MSO News Sports. This is Connections, and if you have any suggestions, comments, complaints, send them along to msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com, and let us know if there's anybody you think might be of interest to be interviewed, to meet and greet, as it were. Let us know. And we're pretty mobile. We can go just about anywhere around here. Okay, so why don't we take a break and we'll see. We're going to talk with Greg Verga first. He's a former Gloucester City Council, former mayoral candidate in the city, but also the owner of Unfinished Music here on MSO Web Radio. And we'll see where the upcoming concert is right now. And again, that's on August 27. Whole bunch of acts going to be playing over at Mile Marker 1 in Gloucester. We'll be right back.
Sports.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Well, as sometimes happens, we didn't get a response. So you know what? I'm going to try it again. Make sure I have the right number here. And we'll call Greg live. If it doesn't work, we've got plenty more lined up. All right, so here we go. Let's see if that works. Now I'm going to text him. All right, so apparently he's not going to answer, and so what we'll do is we'll take a very short break so we can go to our next interview. And what we'll do is we will, we'll be talking with, let's go right to the two moms next, okay? Let's do that. So we'll be right back.
Hello, this is Greg Berga. Sorry I missed your call. If you would...
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
We're not at the Pleasant Street Tea Company today, but rather talking with Heather Atwood, who is on the road. And Heather, hello, how are you?
Hi, Rick. I'm really good. I am in Morristown, New Jersey.
Morristown, New Jersey. All right. So Yes. This is exciting. We've been talking about this behind the scenes. So bring me up to speed. Why on earth are you in Morristown, New Jersey?
Okay, I'm going to give just a tiny little background about Morristown, New Jersey first, mm-hmm. and I'm going to tell you why I'm here. Morristown, New Jersey is the site of Jockey Hollow. Jockey Hollow is where George Washington and Alexander Hamilton spent the worst winter of the century in 1779 to 1780. They had 13,000 troops from the Continental Army here, housed here. Henry Wick said, here, take my 600 acres and you can have a camp here. It was a place where they could settle for the winter and go up into these hills and keep an eye on British troops who were in Manhattan. And at that point, America was in a really bad place. The Continental Army had basically, they had no funding from Congress. There was a Congress and they had decided there was no more money for them. They were destitute. They had no food. They had been purchasing food from shopkeepers and, you know, makers of things, but they were buying them at a reduced cost, and the British could pay full price. So they'd worn out their welcome. in the, you know, corn and ale.
Mm-hmm.
They had no money. They had no food. They had no clothing. They were barely clothed. 13,000 troops. And George Washington was there freezing, watching his troops freeze and starve and saying, this is the end. You know, this idea that we had come up with of a democracy, you know, combating the king and creating our own country, a pure democracy, it might die right here. But what happened was George Washington and Alexander Hamilton sat down at some table by a fire and started strategizing and planning and figuring out how to reinvigorate their troops, how to reorganize things. And they say, right here in Morristown, New Jersey, is where America survived.
Wow. All right.
So Lafayette came in the spring and offered 6,000 French troops, and they came out of here and they fought the Battle of Yorktown. Wow. And they did it. So that's chilling, right?
It is. It is. And I had forgotten where that took place. I remember the story about the worst winter and how bad it was. But boy, that's so you're right there. That's pretty amazing.
We're right there. So my colleague, Nisi Pavetta, and I, and I'll explain the word colleague, went to Jockey Hollow yesterday, and it was really chilling. It's just a beautiful national park, for one. And it was a glorious summer day, not the weather that George Washington had, but it was really moving to be there. So the reason we are here is that Nisi and I were two moms. We are two moms. We met when our kids were in high school, and we've been friends. And in the past year, she and I, as two moms, have spent a lot of time saying, oh my gosh, what is going on with this country? And I keep saying, I don't understand it. I don't understand, you know, I want to understand why people are thinking this way, why they elected Trump, who seems to me to be a difficult character. Today, he's particularly difficult. You know, he came out with a statement about fire and fury in terms of Korea. That's terrifying. But the people in this country are suffering. They really are. There's a lot of despair out there. So she and I decided to get together. Our kids are off at college now. We have some time. And to spend this year going around the country, going into districts where there are important congressional races. So that's what we're focusing on, like 20 different congressional races around the country. We're going to those districts. We're talking to the citizens who live there. We're talking to the candidates who are running. And we're trying to talk to America and tell the story of these districts, tell the story of these congressional races. You know, in Morristown, it's New Jersey's 11th congressional district.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a pretty interesting story here. Their congressman is Rodney Frelinghuysen. He's been serving 12. He's running for his 12th term in office. His father served 11 terms. Apparently, there was a Frelinghuysen who was in the Continental Congress. And it's a very old American name. He's one of the. He's right up there with the Adams and the Roosevelts and the Kennedys in terms of being an important political name.
Mm-hmm.
So Rodney Frelinghuysen is this congressman. Is a congressman from the 11th congressional district. He is a Republican. It's a very Republican place. And he has voted basically in Congress in terms of the classic older Republican, the Rockefeller Republican. He believes in the environment. He believes in the women's right to choose, socially progressive, but fiscally very conservative. He has changed his vote in the past 4 years. He is now voting straight down the line with Donald Trump. He's voting completely against climate change. So socially radically conservative, against funding Planned Parenthood, against he's actually the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, and he funded $1.6 billion for that wall. So the people in this district are very upset. This was not the congressman that they had sent to office and that they've been sort of smiling at for the past 22 years. He's a very different person. And this community is very upset with him. So the man who Michael Moore actually at one point said, I'm going to have a ficus tree run against Rodney Frelinghuysen because he is so immovable in office.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't even bother with a person because you cannot budge this guy. He is so beloved in his community and he's such a stalwart factor. He is actually facing for the first time a very contested race.
Mm-hmm.
And shall I tell you who's running against him?
If you want to, because we want to hear about how we can hear more about this, so sure.
Okay, I'll tell you really quickly. We are going to go interview today Mikey Sherrill, who is the Democratic candidate. Mikey has went to the Naval Academy. She served 10 years of active duty as a helicopter pilot in the European and Iraq theater. She went to law school after that at Georgetown. I think she has a master's in from the London School of Economics. She worked at the U.S. Attorney's Office in New Jersey. She worked in community relations and helping inmates who have just been released into the community, sort of worked her way into the community. She was part of that project. She has a lot of a really noble military background, and she has a lot of public service, obviously, in her career. So we're going to interview her today, and she is a Democratic candidate. So we've interviewed a lot of really interesting people in Morristown already. A couple of, one young man who is the president of Morristown Young Democrats. And then Martin Hewitt, we interviewed him yesterday also. This is a really interesting candidate because he has decided to run as a Republican to the left of this guy, Rodney Frelinghuysen. So that's an interesting
Thing. Wow. Well, oh my goodness gracious. This is just chock full of stuff.
Right?
Yeah, it's amazing. All right, so tell me now how you're going to get this information out, where we can go to listen in and whatever else you can mention.
Okay, so that was kind of the story of New Jersey's 11th Congressional District, right? And each of our podcasts will have some of this history. We'll tell the narrative of these candidates and who lives here and why they care. And we will also have a few recipes, because here I am, you know, the food writer. And these will all be in a podcast.
Okay.
We don't have our website is actually being built right now, so we don't have a website. So you cannot find these podcasts yet. But give us about a month, and we will have this district's podcast up and probably our next one also. And I will – so there's no way anybody can hear this besides talking to you and me on the radio right now, Rick.
Okay.
At this point. But – I will keep you up to date and everyone else about the day we are actually launched, and I would say that would be in about a month.
Awesome, awesome. All right, so in the meantime, we'll keep teasing about this, and it sounds like very important work. And from my standpoint, Heather, you have a tremendous vehicle that can be very informative to local folk everywhere. It's kind of universal, bringing down to the local, you know, like Tip O'Neill said about politics. But I'm hoping, and you did mention it, I'm hoping that you're able to talk with both sides, you know.
Yes.
Okay.
That's really our mission. Our mission is not to be more divisive. We want to talk to both sides and unify.
Excellent.
So Congressman Frelinghuysen's office has declined to talk to us, but we have an interview where we hope, fingers crossed, with a woman who is a Republican from his town, and it's a very, his hometown and big, this district is predominantly Republican, and we will be talking to those people. And as I said, we spoke to this Republican candidate yesterday.
Okay.
So, but this is a story. These stories are relevant to everybody in this country, because who goes to Congress is they're the people voting for the entire nation.
Yep.
You know, and as my colleague Nisi says, in 2018, 435 congressional seats are up. I think 32 Senate seats. I could be wrong there. But anyway, as she says, we're hiring. You know? So, and it matters to the entire country who goes to Washington in 2018.
All right. So stay tuned for the Mid-Pod, the Midterm Report with Heather Atwood. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.
Can you people come in, take a seat? You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street, a great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
All right, that was most exciting from Heather Atwood, especially the story about the Revolutionary War. And she'll be reporting back on the midterm podcast, or otherwise known as, well, there's a shorthand for that, mid-pod? Yeah, mid-pod. Okay, with Nissi Panetta and Heather Atwood, and I hope we can get some of those interviews right here. Right now we're going to be joined by Greg Verga of Unfinished Music. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
Very well. Now, I know that you were a former city councilor. You are a former city councilor, and you ran for mayor. I'm just wondering, did you put out any tweets about how much you defeated your competition by when you made city council? Did you tweet that for a couple of years afterwards?
Yeah, and I've got another one going up today about next time I run, it's going to be fire and fury.
Okay. Well, that's not even funny, I got to tell you. That's got me a little nervous, and you know, someday we're going to have to put a show on here or get some people in studio to discuss this whole thing, because I'm obviously very, very concerned about the lack of civility, the lack of intelligence that comes out of Washington. And anyway, we'll talk about that at some future date. Now, if we're still around here on August 27, we're planning what should be a really cool day, but I'm getting a little nervous about it, Greg. So where are we on this whole thing, and what's happening?
All right. Well, to just fill everybody in, the Unfinished Music first anniversary concert to benefit the Open Door is on August 27th from 4 to 9 at the Mile Marker 175 at 6 Ave. Tickets are only $10. The pre-sales haven't been that great, but the word of mouth and the feedback that I'm getting and the the response on Facebook for the event are really high. So I'm feeling pretty good that, well, it's going to be sort of a madhouse at the door selling tickets, but I think we'll get a pretty good crowd that day. But to avoid the lines, people should go online to unfinishedmusic.bpt, that says in brown paper ticket, so unfinishedmusic.bpt.me, that's M-E, and you can get your tickets on there. The tickets are $10, but the actual charge is about $11.30 because the fee goes to the ticket buyers, so we can give the whole $10 to the Open Door after our expenses.
Uh-huh. Okay, and we do have a link to that posted on North Shore Today. Every day we've been posting that link, so we hope that people will avail themselves of that. And, well, you made me feel a little bit better now, Greg, thank goodness. What's the story with the acts now? Can you name some of them, maybe who are in some of the bands?
Sure, absolutely. So what I've been doing is that people can check out the Unfinished Music Facebook page. Since the beginning of August, I've been doing these promos with either videos or audio clips from when these guests were on the show over the last year and reminded them about the August 27th show. So this is in no particular order, but we have Brian King, we've got Paul Sasquatch Cohen, Pratik Potter, Inga Bird, Alto and Small, that's Jeff Small was a guest on the show. He's got a new band with Ryan Alto. We have Black Sheep Stampede, which is my band, which features Ricky Diamond, who was also a guest as Ricky Diamond, in addition to a guest as a member of Black Sheep Stampede. Seth Kern's band, Care Ave, John Jerome band, Stolen Lions, which is Steve Carraway's band. Steve was on the show as a solo act. And Dan King, who was our very first guest on season one, and our very first guest on season two. So it's a pretty good lineup. We've got two stages we're going to have set up to keep things moving along. Going to be some professional sound, and I think it'll be a great time. Only $10 to get, let's say, 11 acts in a 4 or 5 hour show. So that's a pretty good deal. You're not going to get that anywhere else. And if it's terrible weather, don't worry, we're under the tent. So instead of sitting home watching reruns on Netflix, you can come out and hear some great original local music live.
Oh, it sounds great. And there will be a cash bar in the tent as well. Will people be able to grab something to eat? Now, Mile Marker has a restaurant or a cafe right there, or how's that work?
Yes. They can definitely get food at the restaurant next door or at the bar next door. So people know that there are two tents over at the Mile Marker. One is the bar that they have every weekend, actually all year long, all summer long. And this is the larger tent that we're under, which is a little closer to Essex Ave. So there will be a cash bar inside our tent, and then get food at those two locations right nearby.
All right, so we're going to need some kind of a hand stamp or ticket or something or other so people can go out and come back in?
Right, that's what we're going to do is do hand stamps, because there will be no printed tickets.
Okay.
Either it's you buy the online ticket and just come and say your name, because we'll be able to print out a list.
Mm-hmm.
Or as you come to the door, we'll just stamp your hand so you can come and go as you please.
All right, that sounds pretty cool. And again, as you mentioned, weather no problem. And Greg, I got a little nervous because I'm seeing... I mean, last week there was a country music thing down at over at Stageford Park in Gloucester, and then this weekend there's a blues festival going on. But it seems to me that you could do something every weekend like this and still have a lot of people turn out. Am I reading that right? Because I really don't know about the music community in the city.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because any given weekend, Friday or Saturday, there's probably 8 or 9 places you could go in Gloucester to listen to live music, and they all do pretty well. So for this, I wouldn't worry about it. I believe we're the only large music event going on that particular weekend, so it's not going to be a big deal. And parking should be pretty convenient, too, because it's right there.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think it's... I can't wait for the event myself, not just because I'm playing with Black Sheep Stampede, but I just want to hear all these other guys and gals performing again.
Well, I have to tell you that I have been so blown away by the talent that has come into your basement studio over the last year. I never knew there was so much quality musicianship in the city, never mind the area. We haven't really even touched outside of Cape Ann yet, and it just blows me away the level of musicianship and talent, not only in the writing but also in the playing. And we should point out that we're doing all original music at this thing.
That's what I'm asking the people to play. Most, based on the time, it'll probably be about 4 songs per act, and I've been urging them to play original music. You know, because people can go out and hear Tom Petty's American Girl 10 different ways on any weekend, so, you know, let's just stick to something that's new that they're not going to hear anywhere else.
Well, that's what I was hoping for, because, as I said, I just can't believe how great some of this music is, and the competition in the city. Okay, final thought. I've also noticed, Greg, the cooperation and respect among the musicians when you have them in studio and how they speak of one another in the city, and it doesn't seem to be a level of competition that I expected. Now, am I reading that right?
Yeah, I mean, they all support one another, and many of them play with one another. I mean, when we were looking for a drummer, we couldn't find one because all the drummers in town were in at least 3 different bands. So, it's, you know, they're a pretty good group. But it's... One thing you mentioned, though, is the guests have been local. Of the 19 shows we did in the first season, there was only one guest that was not Cape Ann-based, and that was Pratik Potter, but he plays around Cape Ann. But this coming season, I've got lined up for the 16th, I have Fosse Jaw, which is a local band. They had to reschedule because there was an illness in the band earlier in the month. And I do have a Boston band coming in, the Jackals, on September 27th. So I've started to reach out because, you know, I think I have pretty much everybody in.
Right, right.
If they're listening, is in a band that does originals or knows somebody that they'd like to have on the show, just reach out to me through the Facebook page, and we'd love to listen to them and get them in here.
All right, what's the Facebook page again, please?
It's just Facebook/ Unfinished Music, something like that. They just search Unfinished Music Show, they'll find us.
Okay.
The only one on there.
All right, sounds good. And one more time, how to get tickets online?
Okay, it's at unfinishedmusic.bpt.me.
All right.
Can I give one quick plug for Black Sheep Stampede?
Yep. Nah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, we're going to be on WEMF Radio on the 15th at 5 o'clock, so if they want to listen into an interview/ performance, and then we'll be playing the 19th at Katrina's, along with Gunpowder Gelatine, which is an all-female Queen cover band.
Okay, and we should point out Molly Madigan Pinto has also been on Boston Radio, or is being on Boston Radio.
Right, yeah, she's going to be on The River, 92.5, and she was on our show, and she sort of debuted her new CD and some of the songs off it, so best luck to her. She's an excellent artist.
Absolutely, and all the musicians that we'll be listening to on August 27 will be promoting their stuff as well, and we urge music goers in the town or on the North Shore to frequent it. And we're going to find more, as Greg just mentioned, all over the North Shore, too. It's just amazing. Okay, Greg, anything else?
That's it. Just remind people to get the tickets early, and can't wait to see them at the show.
Okay, Greg, we'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
Thank you, Greg. All right, that is Greg Verga of Unfinished Music, and again, the first annual Unfinished Music Reunion Festival, August 27, 4 p.m. at Mile Marker in Gloucester. So make sure you get your tickets and be there. All right, we'll be right back with our next interview. Still to come, we'll be talking with Ipswich School Committee Chair Sarah Player and Gloucester Times reporter Mary Marcos on Connections on MSO News Sports.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Roger Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else.
It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
The Institution for Savings has always believed in giving back to our communities because our communities are such great places to live and work. Last year alone, we donated and pledged more than $3.9 million to local nonprofits, including local hospitals, schools, food pantries, art organizations, and more. Named one of Boston Business Journal's top philanthropic companies, we are proud to be your local hometown bank. InstitutionForSavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trust, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore, and we're back now with Sarah Player, who is the chairperson of the Ipswich School Committee. And hi, Sarah, how are you?
Good. I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Listen, can you tell me, I know that we did talk a while back, what is the makeup of the Ipswich School Committee before we get into some stuff?
We have seven members. We have two what I would call veteran members who have been on the committee upwards of, you know, a decade, 10 to 15 years. Mm-hmm. Barry and Hugh O'Flynn have been on the committee for a long time. In May, we have two newly elected members, Pav Needler and Nicole Zito. And then there are three of us who are kind of in the middle of the road. We've been there, you know, 4 or 5 years, and that's Carl Nylon, myself, and Chubb Witten. So we have a big variety of expertise and longevity on the committee.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it sounds like a pretty good mix.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you know that you guys. Well, I know that you're dealing with a lot of stuff, but before we get to that, in your terms, since you've been on a school committee, what do you feel that you've gotten out of it? I know that you have a vision when you go in, you have some ideas, but in your 4, 5, 6 years that you've been there. What do you feel that that you have learned from this or gotten out of your tenure?
Oh, I have learned so much, Rick. You learn a lot about yourself. I think you learn about the community. I think some of the biggest projects that we've worked on during my term in the last 5 years has been passing an override. Ipswich has always historically been very supportive of the schools, but there's been an operational budget deficit just of the nature of the way schools are funded. And a few years ago, the town of Ipswich approved an override request that we made. So we've put the kind of the school budget kind of back on more solid footing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we created a long term, like a 5 and 6 year budget plan. So I think that was probably been one of our biggest successes over the past few years, is that override and allowing I think the educators and the administration to feel like they have some stability, whereas years prior, we would put things in the budget and the next following year not have the money to support it. So we were kind of always in this state of kind of cutting programming. Mm-hmm. So people never felt like their programming kind of was on sure footing. So I feel like solid budgeting over the past few years has been a big goal, and I think that's really started to shift the mindset of educators and administrators in the district.
Well, that's good, because I know as a former teacher, it used to bug us that we would get these 2- and 3-year initiatives that you'd have to pour everything into, and then they would disappear. Mm-hmm. So that's good to know. Now, I know that you have a problem. I don't know if I could term it a problem, but you have a situation similar to what they had in Gloucester recently when Gloucester built a new neighborhood school at a cost of, I think, $32 or $35 million, something like that. But then right shortly after that, it came to the fore that other schools are in dire need of help as well. Mm-hmm. And that's not so easy to build more elementary schools. So tell us a little bit about where you are with the Winthrop and Doyen schools now.
So in 2014, Ipswich was approved to participate in the MSBA, the Massachusetts School Building Authority's program, where they support building new or refurbishing schools. So they gave us an opportunity to take a look at either rebuilding just the Winthrop School and or rebuilding both schools at the same time into one building, kind of making one community school. So that became an opportunity for us. So we went through there. They have a really lengthy, thorough process. And so the school committee, with a lot of input from town boards, citizens, educators, decided that the best solution to solving our elementary school facility issues was to build one community elementary school. And then we had to take a look at siting that school. Ipswich is an old town. Yeah. And originally our first site of preference was the Bialik Playground site, which is centrally located in downtown. We thought it was a good site for kids who could potentially walk to school. It was also a site where there is no school right now. So during construction, no students would be impacted at all by the construction. So we thought it was a good site. Unfortunately, we don't control that site. We don't manage that site. That's under the purview of the Board of Selectmen. And there was a lot of concern in town that building a school on that site would, detract from the green space there. So we were not granted permission to use that site. So that site became unavailable. So our next preferred site was the Winthrop site, where we currently have one of the elementary schools. That site proved to have a lot of challenges, logistical challenges with it. We couldn't fit all the parking on the site. There were some community concerns with the traffic impact and just its actual location in the center of the town. So that site really had more challenges than we wanted. Mm-hmm. So luckily we have another site. We have the Doyen site, which is about 2 miles out of the center of town. It currently holds the Doyen Elementary School. It's a beautiful site that's surrounded by Willowdale State Forest. So that site is about just over, I think, 17 acres. So that site can support both a new school as well as all the necessary parking. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of outdoor learning spaces and outdoor learning opportunities. So that site can support all the amenities necessary that we would like on a school site. So so the school committee is currently supporting that site to build one community school at the current Doyen school site.
Well, I was hoping they would do that in Gloucester as well, because they had a site, but that's a story for another day. But, yeah, you're right. It's beautiful out there with the Doyen. It's beautiful, and it's easy to get to and so on. Easy access, not a problem for traffic. And, my contention was that if my daughter gets on a bus to ride to school, a neighborhood school that's 2 miles away, I don't really care if she has to get on a bus and ride to a neighborhood or to a central school that's 5 miles away. She's still on a bus, so it's okay with me. And I would hope that, you can work that out. So what's the next step in the process?
So at this point, we have submitted our plans to the MSBA. They have a board meeting at the end of this month where they will decide if we can, in fact, move the site to Doyen. And we failed to get town money Through a special town meeting in June, we failed to reach the two-thirds majority threshold of the vote. So the school committee has decided to support this the completion of the feasibility work with its own budget.
Mm-hmm.
So we need approximately $250,000 to complete the feasibility work at the Doyon site.
Okay.
So we have decided to support that work out of our own budget at this time, so that we can then hopefully present to the MSBA a final project, you know, probably late winter,
okay,
early spring, and then
right,
it will have to come to the town. So the town essentially will get the final vote, both at a town meeting as well as the ballot, to move this project forward. But we really felt like we hadn't completed the feasibility work, you know, when the town originally gave us money to launch this work back in, I believe, 2014. To launch this feasibility work, we felt like we needed, our job was to really give the town the best possible project.
All right, so you feel that it's pretty comprehensive at this point, and it's a good plan?
Yes, we do.
Excellent. All right, what's the population of the school system like in terms of flux, whether it's increasing or decreasing? What's the overall outlook on that? Because I know that it's hard to gauge sometimes to figure out what size you're going to make a school, where you're going to put these kids,
right,
and so on. How do you guys look at that?
Well, the MSBA has a pretty thorough process. The first part of their feasibility work is, I believe, what they call it, the enrollment. They take a look at our student enrollment. They take a look at NESDEC numbers. They take a look at birth rate in a town, and they project out what the student enrollment will be.
Mm-hmm.
So our enrollment, like many enrollments in the area, are decreasing over time. So they project, I believe, the current population of the Ipswich Elementary Schools is about 696 students. We're building the school for a population of 775, but we don't expect to get back to the 775 number for about 20 years.
Okay.
So they know they're building a school, you know, for 50 or 60 years, so they have to look and project enrollment out from today, you know, outwards.
Right.
So enrollment is dropping in Ipswich, and I imagine it in most areas.
Yeah, well, I know. Again, that's another topic that we could spend some time
right,
on.
Exactly.
Well, Sarah, the good news, you've mentioned in the past interview some of the good things that are going on in Ipswich schools as we get ready for another school year. And
mm-hmm.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about your new superintendent?
Yes. So we have recently hired Dr. Brian Blake. He came to us from the Sanborn Regional District up in New Hampshire. So we conducted a big formal search, and he is a stellar leader. We're very excited to have him. He brings with him about 15 years of experience. He has built schools in his previous districts. He's a really he's a wonderful communicator. He, of course, has walked into a really big project here. He's
right,
walked into a big challenge for us. You know, he's trying to help us build consensus around this project, and hopefully we'll be unifying two elementary school cultures into one. The good news is Ipswich has done that before when we combined our middle school and high school.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 20 years now, we combined the middle school and high school. So we took two cultures and put them into one building. We tried to keep them separate because we have, you know, sixth graders and sharing some of the physical space with, you know, seniors in high school. But I think Ipswich is a really thoughtful community, and I feel like we can meet the challenges that combining two elementary schools will have. And I feel very confident that Dr. Blake will help us with that.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because you sound so upbeat and optimistic. We interview the coaches and the athletic director over at the high school, and it's the same feeling over there. There's this feeling of good in the community, and I was going to ask you if that does exist outside of the school community, and it sounds like that you do get a lot of support from the residents.
Oh, absolutely. And Ipswich has been, you know, historically huge supporters of the schools in all ways. You know, we have the FEFFI's grant program that was supported, you know, the 350-year-old land grant that supports enrichment and enhancement in the school system. So Ipswich has long been pro-education.
Excellent. All right. Okay, Sarah, anything else you want to mention?
No, I think that's it.
I'm hoping you're able to connect with Dr. Blake, and he can give you some of his insight as well.
I am working on that as we speak.
Excellent.
All right, that is Sarah Player, who is the school committee chair in Ipswich with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.
And I will be interviewing Dr. Blake. I'll be meeting Dr. Brian Blake next week. I believe it's on Wednesday. And looking forward to that, as we got a whole bunch of stuff coming up on Wednesday. Bill and I will be meeting with some various people. We've got some terrific interviews lined up for next week, so we hope that you'll be with us. And Dr. Brian Blake, the new Ipswich school superintendent, should be one of those. Looking forward to that. My thanks to Sarah Player as well for helping us out along those lines. So still to come, we're going to talk with the new Gloucester reporter. Well, she's relatively new, Mary Marcos, who works for the Gloucester Times. And we'll be right back with that interview in just a minute.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Back on Connections now with Mary Marcos, who is a Gloucester Times reporter. And Mary, welcome to MSO. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, nice to talk to you guys. And I did see you at a fire recently, and I thought there was this a student reporter at the site, and it turned out to be you. So give us a little background as to maybe your education and how you got where you are.
Well, I graduated from UNH just over two years ago now, and I didn't actually get my I didn't major in journalism. I was a literature major, and I sort of fell into the field after I graduated. I started at the Jewish Journal newspaper. It's a nonprofit paper in Salem by Pickering Wharf.
Mm-hmm.
And after working there for almost a year, I transferred over here to the Gloucester Times, and I'm loving it.
Excellent. That's super. I know that generally speaking, when they bring in a new reporter, he or she gets the periphery all around Cape Ann, but you've done a lot of stuff. And one of the things that fascinated me this summer was the stories you have done on the piping plovers or piping plovers, however you pronounce it. And give me a little bit of background on that, on how that was to cover that.
That was really interesting. You know, the community really just got attached to these chicks. And, of course, only one survived and flew away very recently from the nest. And, you know, it was really cool because they're such fascinating creatures. And the people who volunteered really were dedicated. And they there are different things that they learned from there where, like, when, for example, they would put cages around the nest to protect the chicks. And in certain spots that worked, but in Plum Island there were owls around there, so mm-hmm. they would get a little smart and they would start perching on those cages and you know, get the birds as soon as they left, and so they had to change their strategy there. So, you know, talking to the volunteers was very interesting, and learning and hearing that the bird was survived and flew away was definitely a happy story.
Yeah, and excuse me, the human element over there, of course, is that it's Good Harbor Beach, and I know the first time I saw it roped off a year ago, I think it was, it took up a good-sized chunk of the beach, but it seemed to me that, and from your stories and Ray's stories, that people were very cooperative and very respectful of these little tiny birds, and they weren't really upset of losing some of the beach to the birds.
Yeah, and you know what else? It didn't affect revenues, actually. The only thing that affected beach revenues this year was the weather, which was a little bit off. But no, people seemed to be very respectful of the boundaries that they set for the plovers.
Yeah, the weather's been kind of cool. And I know that you have been covering Rockport quite a bit. And there are two stories up there that I want to grab you for a couple of seconds. One is the steeple at the church. I forget the name of the church, but I was... I do a course with teachers on facts, fictions, fable, and folklore of Cape Ann, and the steeple used to have a cannonball lodged in it, and that steeple now is down, and so maybe you can bring us up to date on that one.
Yeah, the cannonball, it's more of a symbolic cannonball, but they do still have that. And it will go back up once the renovations are done.
Okay.
But the issue was once they started renovations, they learned that there was much more rot and deterioration in the structure than they had originally realized. Mm-hmm. So it's almost $500,000 more than the original estimated cost to repair it. And what they found also is the bell has a crack in the middle of it. To fix that, bell would have been, I believe, it was somewhere around $25,000, and mm-hmm. to buy a new bell would have been $40,000. So what they did was they found another bell from Michigan, very similar to the one that they have now, and they're going to replace it with that bell.
Cool.
And they're excited that they found one that's it's very similar. So it was a 45-inch bell, so just 3 inches bigger. And it's expected to cost around $9,500 plus costs for shipping and an adapter to be made for it, but much less expensive than the alternatives. And it was made by the same company.
Pretty cool. And I was told that the cannonball was a recreation of was it the Revolutionary War or something that a British ship, or was it 1812, fired off into Rockport? Had you heard that story?
Yeah, the building did play a role in the War of 1812, sounding the alarm when the British warship Nymph invaded Sandy Bay.
Oh.
The Nymph fired on and hit the steeple, but failed to silence the bell, so the church still has the cannonball. The one that's in the tower is the symbolic sort of recreation of it, but they do still have the actual cannonball where they keep in storage and take out on special occasions.
I'm smiling because I'm a 40-year math teacher, and here I am learning something rather from you, and I appreciate it. And that's the other thing too, Mary. You mentioned it, but I imagine interviewing local town folk, you probably learn a lot of stuff that you can't write down too. You can't actually put in the paper, but I'm sure it's a great learning experience.
You know, it's funny you mention that. I've never known so much about local government before I had this job. I know more about local government in the towns that I cover than I do in my own.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's absolutely a learning process. It's really cool to see how government works on the local level.
Okay, well, speaking of that, what about today's story that you have in the Gloucester Times? I referenced it in our newscast this morning about parking in Rockport, and anybody who's ever been up to Rockport, really at any time of year, our parking is at a premium, but this looks like a little bit of a different twist. Can you just mention that?
Yeah, basically what's happened is people have been able to reserve parking spaces if they request it from the police, and Chief John Horvath mentioned to me that, you know, he tries to accommodate as many people as possible, but there's really no guidelines or process for him to follow in order to determine whether or not he should allow any given reservation. So what he's done is he's requested that the town administrator and the board of selectmen and possibly the parking and traffic committee come up with some sort of policy so that he can follow it and be able to treat people fairly and have the public know what the rules are and what the guidelines are there, because I think some residents were feeling that it was a little bit unfair that they the Shailen Lou most recently was reserving parking spaces for different events for some people who needed a closer parking space for health reasons.
Right, right. Okay, I know too. I went to one of the events up there a couple of years ago. I think it was in November or December, and it was Mary Chapin Carpenter and her bus. I think she had two buses, excuse me, and they took up a whole side street because we were looking for parking when we went up there. So
yeah,
it's at a premium, and I remind people you should take a look at today's Gloucester Times. Mary's story is right there on the front page, right at the top. Mary, is there anything else now you're working on that maybe you could mention readers might be interested in coming up, or is it just sort of a day-by-day proposition for you?
Well, right now what I'm doing is I'm also covering Gloucester for a short period of time while one of our reporters are out for the week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm covering the three towns and the city. And I'm going to be covering the Gloucester Blues Fest coming up. So if anyone's interested in blues music and the festival, all these national artists are going to be there. So that'll be coming out, I believe, in tomorrow's paper.
Right, well, I don't know what happened with that. My goodness gracious. I think what happened was sort of the record skipped there for some reason. I don't know. Love technology. But that was Mary Marcos, Gloucester Daily Times reporter. And Mary, thank you so much for joining us today. And I did thank her when I, you know, before I hung up the phone. And I'm sorry about that technical glitch there. I don't know what the bozo that was. So hope to have Mary on from time to time, and Ray Lamont, and maybe Dave Olson. Anybody else we can get from our local papers, we appreciate their help. Of course, Nick Kukuru joins us many nights on Monday nights here on North Shore Sports Night, talking about Cape Ann sports. And Nick has been there for a few years now, as time marches on. Also, of course, we check in with the Salem News and others around the area. So I would like to remind you that on Monday nights we do have North Shore Sports Night every Monday night. Well, most Monday nights, generally, and that goes on at 7 o'clock from 7 to 8. Tim Kearns and I will be hosting that. We're getting ready for football, as we mentioned. Our first game is the weekend of September 8. We'll have two games on Friday night and possibly two more games on Saturday that first weekend. And we will have live streaming video on Friday nights, too. We will be covering, I'm thinking we're going to dip into the Cape Ann League a little bit more this year because WNBP up in Newburyport has changed owners, and I'm not sure whether or not they'll be doing Newburyport football, Newburyport High School football. And, of course, we have some connections up there with Newburyport, with Ipswich, with North Andover, with North Reading, Hamilton Wenham, Pentucket, Masconomet. So we will probably be dipping into the Cape Ann League a little bit more in terms of football broadcast this fall if we're able to do that, and I think we will be. And, of course, on this coming Wednesday, we will have another live-in-studio performance from Greg Verga's Unfinished Music Studio, and that will be at 5 o'clock this week. We usually go on at 3, but that will be at 5 o'clock this time. And what else do we have next week? Thursday, it's Connections, more interviews. Hopefully, we'll be checking up with the two moms on the road with their podcast as well. And on Friday, starting tomorrow at 10 a.m., it will be Josh Arnold, and we'll have Trending Now. And I'm just taking a look here if I can find it. Josh's guest tomorrow will be including Amanda Orlando Kesterson, who will be talking about the pancake breakfast for the Rotary, which is coming up on August 19 in Gloucester. And I believe that's generally held at Stagefort Park, and I think it starts very early in the morning. And so Josh will talk with Amanda about that. Also tomorrow, Berkia Chelvia, if I have that right, is this is just not going to work, is it? Okay, is on with Josh tomorrow. She is a candidate for Ward 4 on the City Council in Peabody. And also, Josh will be talking with Andrea French, who's on the school committee in Salem. And his final guest tomorrow is scheduled to be candidate for City Council, Bob Wynot. He is the former city clerk in Gloucester and also a former city councilor, and he's looking to come out of retirement, as it were. Well, it were Connections here on
on MSO. I appreciate my guest today. Thank you so much for listening. Heather Atwood, thank you for checking in from New Jersey. To Sarah Player, the Ipswich School Committee Chairperson, we appreciate it. Mary Marcos, Gloucester Times reporter, thanks for your interview, and we'll be talking with you hopefully in the future, and also to Greg Verga of Unfinished Music. My name is Rick Moore. Our producer and engineer is Bill Proposky. Bye-bye.